The World Tomorrow. Garner Kent Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
We now face a nation filled with youngsters who are hostile to their parents, to the establishment, to the society, perhaps to the nation and its flag, to the policies of government, to the basic institutions of the state, and sometimes even to each other. We have succeeded through some devious method in the past, who knows how many years, certainly a decade or two, in alienating the most precious natural resource a nation could ever have, that of a nation's own youth. Last time I was contrasting what is happening inside the Soviet Union and in China, where the policies of communism, which have said basically, if we can get the hearts of the children, we can rule the world, as Lenin once said, words to that effect, have been carried out time and time again in school systems through the entire socio-economic and even religious, such as there is, order of the community, where now millions of young communist Chinese, or communists in the Soviet Union, have been reared on such rigid discipline, such rigid teaching in their school systems with communist theology. It is really a no-God atheism, but a theology, as I have shown, that really even evolution is a dogmatism. It's a no-God concept, but in one sense of the word, it substitutes the state for God, and the state becomes a kind of a God-like protector and the deliverer, the provider of everything. It is state worship. And these children, by the millions, have been taught. They have been rigidly disciplined. They have been, in some cases, virtually forced to imbibe, to absorb, to memorize the party teaching. I read that when we first had our ping-pong diplomacy, you may remember, a good deal of information coming out about communist China. And I have read a good bit of works, some of the other works on China and Russia, both before and since. One thing that always amazed me was the concerted effort so thoroughly to indoctrinate in those countries, especially in China, where thoughts of Chairman Mao were everywhere. Signs along the roadway in big cities were giant, great, huge banners and pictures. The nation festooned with these pictures of Chairman Mao. Everybody pulling out their little book, Thoughts of Chairman Mao, several times a day, broadcast over loudspeakers in public. Every bit of public entertainment, every sports festival, everything that could be called mass media or communication, continually, steadily grinding out the thoughts of Chairman Mao. By this method, by this insistent teaching, two nations, great nations, two of the biggest nations on the face of the earth, have managed to so completely indoctrinate their populace, I don't know whether 100 Voices of America and 10,000 missionaries and all the eloquent spokesmen for the free world and the capitalistic system could, in the next millennium, really change what has been started inside the Soviet Union and China. But all of this teaching has proved one thing. They can produce a disciplined generation of people for a wrong cause, for a wrong purpose. While we here in the Western world have thrown discipline to the ground, we trample upon it, we suspect it, we're afraid of it, we have ripped it out of our school systems, you virtually never find it in the home. We have taken it mostly even away from our own police departments. We certainly don't find very much of it in the courts. We're afraid of the word, we're afraid of its harsh overuse. We're afraid of its abuse, and so therefore you don't see very much discipline in society. We're a do-it-yourself, do-it-your-own-way, do-your-own-thing, if and when you get around to feeling like it. A kind of a society that has lost any moral goals or values, a society that indulges itself. Last time I said I would tell you there are 12 rules for rearing a disobedient, resentful, hostile. The word back in the 50s was delinquent. Today it might be something else. First came the hippie movement, and then, of course, the kind of a reaction to that, the Jesus People movement, and other such splinter movements, each of which really is not a movement per se, but just somebody's analysis of what's in the now scene among the youth. And there can be just about as many different splinter ideas going off in different directions so far as a way of life, a new little hippie community, or the Klan of the Charles Manson type families and so on that are manifestations of what is wrong in society. Well, let me give you those 12 rules and see how closely you may have been coming and following these in your own family. Here are the 12 rules distributed by an anonymous writer. I know the Houston, Texas Police Department distributed these some years ago, and other police departments. I do not know who wrote it, but it was widely circulated in the 1960s. First, begin with infancy to give your child everything he wants. This way he'll grow up believing, like most people do, that the world owes him a living. Second, when he picks up bad words, laugh at him. Tell him he's cute. That way he'll pick up cuter phrases later that'll blow the top of your head off right in front of guests. Three, never give him any spiritual training. Never tell him about God or about the Bible. Wait until he's 21 and then let him decide for himself. Four, avoid the use of the word wrong. It may develop a guilt complex in him. He may go around thinking that he is guilty. That way, later on, when he's accused of stealing a car, or of robbing a store, or a bank, or arrested, he'll think that society is against him, that he's being wrongfully persecuted. Five, as mother and father, pick up everything he leaves lying around, from his little toys and blocks to his clothes, books, shoes, anything. Do everything for him. Get his meals on time, clean up his room, pick up after him, but never require him to do this, so later on he'll be really experienced in throwing off his responsibilities on others. Six, let him read any printed matter he can get his hands on, beginning with the cheapest kinds of shoddy comic books, right on down to the real hardcore pornography later on. So that way you can be consistent. You carefully sterilize his drinking glass. You see to it that his dishes and silverware have come out of the electric, perhaps, washing machine right there in the house, if you have one, dishwasher in this case. But you let his mind feast on garbage. Seven, be sure to keep quarreling frequently. You don't have to urge most parents to do that. In the presence of your children. In that way, they won't really be too terribly shocked when the home is broken up later. Eight, give a child all the spending money he wants. Never let him earn his own. Why should he have things as tough as you had them? Nine, satisfy his every craving for food and drink and for personal comfort and desire. In between meal snacks, you've always got them in the freezer. Every time you go shopping, you bring home ice cream and all of that type of goodies. That way, every sensual desire of his is satisfied, because you know that denial may lead to some harmful frustrations. 10. Always take his part against neighbors' children, his teachers, the policemen, everybody in society. 11. When he gets into real trouble, always apologize to the policeman or the teacher and say, "Well, I never could do a thing with him." 12. Fasten your seatbelt. You're in for an awful rough ride. I think those are fairly good rules. They make a lot of sense. I want to tell you something that I have read. I put it in this booklet called The Plain Truth About Child Rearing. You ought to write for this free booklet, The Plain Truth About Child Rearing, because some of these quotations I'm going to give you will just about blow your mind.
Mom, Mommy, and Daddy say that being a parent is a full-time job.
Bye-bye, Johnny. You be a good little boy. Do what your mommy says while I'm at work today.
Parents need to help their children reach their full potential. You can give your children a solid foundation in citizenship, morality, work habits, and personality by using the principles of child rearing found in the pages of your Bible. These guidelines are fully explained in our free booklet, The Plain Truth About Child Rearing.
Johnny, why don't you and Zipper run outside and meet Daddy? He'll be coming home any minute now.
The Plain Truth About Child Rearing shows you how to be a full-time parent. The results are rewarding. Send for your free copy of The Plain Truth About Child Rearing.
We sure have a good mommy and daddy, huh, Zipper?
Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Every year, millions of young parents around the world, as well as in the United States and Canada, are magically endowed with a bright, new, little baby. Usually, they didn't want it to happen. Sometimes they marry accidentally. Sometimes the child comes along, as you know, accidentally. And I think oftentimes young parents assume that magically, because their physical bodies have come to the place to where they can propagate, to where they can reproduce themselves, that inborn within them is the knowledge, the education, the temperament, the skills, the patience, the wisdom that it takes to rear those children so that they become model citizens. Many of them aren't quite smitten with that idea, and so while they have a very laudable practice, I don't know about the wisdom of this, many tens of thousands will snatch greedily a booklet or a book from the reading rack or the paperback stand of a local drugstore about child rearing. It may be a book about how your children eat, or it might be because they're terrified because he sucks his thumb, or he stays awake all day and cries all night, and all the things that little children do. Maybe they're just sick and tired of him throwing his food and his silverware on the floor. They want to find out why he does this. And the both of them are just about driven out of their minds because of all the antics of this new little child they have, and they don't know how to handle him. So they grab a book. Many such books are available. There are dozens of them. The research that I did, going back a few years now, into child rearing was absolutely a fantastic study. I would go home week after week with my arms literally laden. I've taken as many as I can get of two library cards at a time out of the big libraries, wading through books on child psychology, on child rearing, child training, child everything. And in doing so, I gradually prepared this book, The Plain Truth About Child Rearing. Now, it needs to say a great deal more than it does. It's a fairly thick book. And here is one quotation you will get when you write for this booklet. It's free of charge and no price in it. But this was an example of some of the mind-bending suggestions given to young parents about their children. 2.5 years, wrote a pair of authors in a book about child rearing. Quote, now they're informing parents about children, what children are like. This is the result, you know, like going to the zoo and watching the gibbons swinging around, the double glass deal where kids are put in there to play with toys or with each other, and the doctor is sitting in there and he's taking notes and observing this behavior. Now, this behavioral observation, gradually over a period of time, is put together in books which try to teach parents about the habits of children and the way they could be expected to be. So this is an educative book. 2.5 years, and I'm quoting, this is an age about which parents may need warning, because so much the child now does, naturally, almost inevitably, is directly contrary to what his parents would like to have him do. The 2.5-year-old is not, temperamentally, an easily adaptable member of any social group. The change in behavior which takes place between 2.5 and 1.5 can be rather overwhelming, perhaps to the child as well as to the adults that surround him. 2.5 is a peak age of disequilibrium. Now, mind you, this lasts for a few months. Now, this same book went on clear up to 16. It was a remarkable collection of observations about the way you could expect your children to be at any given age. So you're thumbing through the book, and you're wanting to know exactly what a kid is going to be like at 2.5. And this is supposed to tell you. I don't believe it. Maybe I'm just not brainwashed enough, but I don't really believe that the way they say this child is going to be this way just because he's 2.5. Parents often say they can't do a thing with a child of this age. First of all, a 2.5-year-old is rigid and inflexible. Now that's remarkable. A question right here, if I could. Is that true of Japanese babies? Is this a racist book? The book that I'm quoting from, written by a pair of doctors, was about child rearing. It was published widely and sold to Americans. Now Americans represent many different ethnic groups. Black and white, as we say, not really white, flesh-colored would be better. And Chicano-American, Japanese-American, people from Eastern Europe and all over the place. Is this true of people in Thailand? Is it true of people in Africa? Is it true of babies in Italy and in Germany and in China? That always the human baby, or is it talking of an American baby? Now, if it's talking of an American baby, does it mean a white or a black baby? It didn't spell this out. So presumably, it transcends all color ties, and it's talking about children born into a particular society. I'm assuming this, the authors didn't say. So that's one shortcoming of the book. It isn't dealing with human nature, apparently, but with what happens to a child in our society, because I've seen many societies where a child of 2.5 is virtually stoic. Instead of being rigid and inflexible, absolutely pliable and pliant, willing to do anything the parent tells it to. But the difference seems to be in the way the parent has been treating the child, in what kind of training, what kind of discipline the child has had. But this is what the author said. He wants, that is the little 2.5-year-old, exactly what he wants when he wants it. Sounds like the president of the United States, or the head of a corporation, or maybe your wife, or maybe your husband. It sounds like the way adults are with each other. They want what they want when they want it. And he's only 2.5, so he's pretty adult already. He cannot adapt, give in, wait a little while. Everything has to be done just so. Well, if that were true, they ought to make him a general and put him in the army. Everybody 2 1/2 ought to be a general. If everything has got to be done just so, that sounds like the military. Perfect. Put the 2 1/2-year-olds in charge of the military, then everything will be just right. It says here in the book, everything has to be in the right place he considers its proper place. Now, that doesn't quite square with what it says elsewhere about 2 1/2-year-olds, where they are told that they leave everything lying around. Now, this same book, just a little before this, a symptom of a so-called predictable stage, said, and I quote, the 18-monther, now we're backing it up 1 year, you just heard a quotation from a famous pair of doctors, a book called Child Behavior. But that's a bad word, behavior? Nothing in behavior about this, except that we've come to change that term around. The 18-monther walks down a one-way street, though this one-way street can be readily reversed. And this street, more often than not, seems to lead in a direction exactly opposite to that which the adult has in mind. Asked to come here, dear, he either stands still or runs in the opposite direction. Now, to the dog, you can say, you know, and the dog runs away from you. What are you going to do? You going to put up with that very long? Boy, most people don't, I'll tell you. The horse, the chimpanzee, or the pet, whatever it might be, all you got to do is whistle. They used to tell a story about just crooking a finger, you know, to the dog, or maybe the trained bear, or whatever they had to the bouncer in the bar. You might have heard that one, too. And he comes shuffling over there, not the kid. You say, come here, son. Zoom, out the front door. They tell you, this is the way it happens. Asked to come here, dear, he either stands still, just absolute rebellion, or runs in the opposite direction. He may, it says, even like to turn around and walk backwards. Ask him to put something in the wastebasket. Here, dear, throw this in the trash can. And he is more likely to walk over to the trash can and empty out what is already in it. Hold out your hand for the cup that he has just drained, and he'll look at you and drop it on the floor. Give him a second sock to put on, and he will more likely than not remove the one which is already on the other foot. His enjoyment of the opposite may be the reason why it works so well if he is running away from you, to say bye-bye and walk away from him. I saw a woman try that in a large discount store just very, very recently. She must have read this book. She had a shopping cart full of goodies there, and the little kid took off, and she said, come here, a few times, screamed at him, and this look, awareness came over her face as she remembered the line in the book, and she said, bye-bye, and the kid turned around and said, bye-bye, and zoom, he just kept going. So she dropped the shopping cart and took off, flying down the aisle looking for him. It was hilarious, but she'd probably read the book. He, that is 18 months of age, seldom obeys any verbal command. No is his chief word. Now, my kids were all sick. They were weird. I had weird kids. They never once said at 18 months or 2 1/2 years or 10 years, no to me. Never once. Of course, you can ask anybody that knows them. They've been sitting around the corner just terrified of me all their lives. Unhappy kids. Never smile. I'm saying that facetiously. I hope you realize. No, it's been quite the other way. They've been very, very happily reared, I think. Maybe I've made quite a few mistakes. I'm sure that I have, as any parent does. But, you know, I have reared them according to some principles I got out of the Word of God, out of the Bible. And it so directly contradicts some of the child psychologists, it is the complete backward opposite of what they say. Asked to come here, dear, at 18 months, my children came toddling for me and right toward me. Two of mine can't hear. They were born profoundly deaf, so they couldn't hear my verbal commands, but they began to learn, and they became just as obedient as the boy who could. Asked to put on the other sock, they sat down and put it on. Asked to carry something to the wastebasket, and they took it over there and dropped it in. Why? Well, because I figured I ought to spend at least as much time on my children as on my dog.
A nation is only as strong as its family. If our nation were as strong as your family, how strong would it be? And if relationships in your family are not what you would like, where can you go for help? Plain Truth, a publication of understanding, is concerned. Every Plain Truth brings you helpful articles on how relationships can be strengthened between husband and wife, parents and children, families and neighbors. With interesting and useful information on helping your child enjoy learning at home and school, budgeting and sensible use of credit, preventing teenage depression, household health and safety, homemaking tips for the working mother, achieving full human potential, coping with inflation. Plain Truth emphasizes quality in all aspects of daily living. Let Plain Truth help strengthen your family and nation. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
By the time they got to be 4, 6, 8, 11, and 13, it got really interesting. And I suppose there's something to say for this kind of an idea of child psychologists, that if children, thousands upon thousands of them, had been observed, and case histories had been carefully compiled, and these had been analyzed and superposed one upon another to get a discernible trend, which I'm sure is what happens, if they had been observing children who, just like gibbons in a zoo, had been left to shift for themselves, left to do anything for themselves, and they were just observing the natural, carnal, normal, resentful, rebellious, selfish, self-seeking human behavior, as these children were allowed to grow up, not being reared or trained, but allowed to grow up, I suppose they could get a case history that would sound just about exactly like the quotations from this book that you will find quoted in The Plain Truth About Child Rearing. It went on to say that the 4-year-old, assured these doctors, would be just normally expected to do all sorts of things, such as making decisions for the family, etc. That the 6-year-old often likes to say, "I'll kill you," or "I hate you." The doctor said, by the time the child is 8, he is exuberant, expansive, cocky, and rarely finishes anything he starts. At 9, he is independent and resists bossing. He exploits adults to get his own way and uses neurotic excuses. At 10, he is suddenly nice. At 11, he is rude and argumentative. At 13, he likes to be left alone. At 14, he is noisy, said the doctor. And at 15, he is hard-boiled. But then he said, in case you're getting a little tired of waiting it out, but 16, he said, really is sweet 16. I got bad news and good news. At 16, he's as sweet as he can be, for all the pimples and the hair. But man, at 1.5, he'll spit in your eye. At 2.5, he runs away down the street. At 3, he choked the cat. At 4, he stepped on the goldfish. At 5, he went out and shot his grandmother. At 6, he said, "I'll kill you," to a cop. At 7, he hit mother in the face with a frying pan. At 8, he is rude and argumentative. At 9, he is exceedingly noisy. At 10, you know, it's unbelievable. Are we reading something that is modern, or did I get this out of the Ode to the Traveling Minstrel back in the Knights of the Round Table days or something? No, this is a fairly modern book. It's still, I understand, being read, no doubt being sold, this by a pediatrician who assures people that if they can weather these incredible phases of child rearing, they can look forward to that happy, brighter day of sweet 16. Times have changed. Lots of the runaways out there in the highways are 16. Lots of the kids at the rock operas are 16. Hundreds of thousands of them that are on meth or speed or bennies or reds or yellows are 16. Tens of thousands of them that are pregnant and not married yet are 16. Thousands of them that are inside jails are 16. 16 is becoming the most represented age for arrests of all age groups. Yet here's a child psychologist that tells us about all these phases and then says, sweet 16. And they realize, and this is a cute thing, it sells books, but it doesn't develop decent human beings. It says, quote, that at 16, they're friendly, good-tempered, self-assured, and realize that mom and dad have really learned something these past few months. You know, that would be kind of funny if it weren't so utterly piteous that people can rear children. Now, I don't really want to say that too many people have rigidly followed such advice and thought of it just like a virtual Bible for child rearing. Thankfully, I don't think people really do it that way. But when I research these dozens of books, and you will have in this book when you write for it many such quotations, in the first part especially, where it talks about the so-called phases of child development and how parents are urged to play a kind of a diplomatic, friendly role with their children, and the parent's attitude is supposed to be far better than that of the child. You're supposed to be the one who is able to give. The child is never able to give. It tells you all these things. It scares the daylights out of parents by telling them that their children could possibly take a turn into some horrible, deep, neurotic age if they are to thwart or in any way punish them. That they have to steer clear of all of this punishment It said that a parent's attitude should be positive, that of the instructor, by surrounding children with interesting little things. And here was one quotation that really was a mind-blower. As an example, by surrounding the child constantly with objects that it has a right to work with, forbidden objects gradually come to lose their stimulating value. Quoting now from a book by a different author called Psychological Care of Infant and Child. And so it says, children cease to play with fire, with matches. They stop turning gas jets on and off, picking up sharp knives and forks, pulling over glass vases and bottles. But where the positive method of training does not make them let these objects alone, then gentle pencil wrapping, taking a pencil and going whack, whack, whack on the back of their hand, is a safe and a sane procedure. I'd like to editorialize a little on that. It says, by surrounding the child constantly with objects it has a right to work with, forbidden objects gradually lose their stimulating value. For example, your children cease to play with fire. That is, if your home is still intact and is not burnt to the ground and you and your children are still alive. With matches, same comment. Turning gas jets on and off. That is, if they are alive, your home is intact and that of all of your neighbors in the whole block. Picking up sharp knives and forks. That is, if they have not been so seriously cut, they have bled to death. Pulling over glass vases and bottles. They will stop doing this gradually if they have not long since killed themselves. But where the positive method of training does not make them let these objects alone, and what is the positive method? Surrounding them with interesting objects with which they have a right to play. A match is an awfully interesting object. And if you're not going to do anything at all to prevent your child from playing with it just by, say, well, give him a toy, but the matches are right there handy, well, you got a problem. You better call the fire department right now. You might as well not delay. Call the fire department. Tell them, you've got a kid here. The matches are within reach, and you're going to go buy a child psychology book you heard about, and you're going to surround him with interesting objects and just pray that your home doesn't burn down. Write for this book and see some of these quotations and then find what is the right way. It makes common sense, and it does base the teaching in this book upon the Bible. It's called The Plain Truth About Child Rearing, and it's free of charge. This method of child rearing is not weird. It's not old-fashioned. It does make sense. Also, write for the booklet, Why Were You Born? You need to know whether or not humanity was created and put here on the earth by an intelligent and almighty creator for a definite purpose, and if so, what is that purpose, and why is all of humankind seemingly totally unaware of it? You need this booklet. It's not just some new leaf to turn over or new lease on life or new beginning for you. It's not a book on psychology to pep up your spirits. It is a basic, hard, cold reality of why you draw breath. Just request the booklet, Why Born? While you're at it, why don't you request the current number of The Plain Truth and find that there is a solution beyond human understanding. I hope you'll write for it. We'll send it to you by return mail as soon as you dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.